This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Thank you for joining us. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and it is a fabulous, wonderful day to live in the mid-Willamette Valley. Here we are, sandwiched for your lunch hour to talk about the local issues and individuals, ideas, and institutions. Sandwiched in between Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly, which is an honored place to be, I got to tell you. We're nothing like them because we get to focus on you. We get to focus on you, and all those who can hear my voice are in Marion and Polk County, for the most part, and we get to talk about what's going on in Salem and Kaiser and things that affect our quality of life and things that affect our pocketbooks. And today is Tuesday, and we have the great joy of having the mayor of Salem with us, Chuck Bennett. Welcome back to the studio.
Great. Good afternoon.
So we like to take advantage of having Chuck's visit to get the skinny on what's going on and try to probe him for the inner workings and the secrets and behind the scenes. And he never gives us any.
No.
So
we've talked about that before, too, when he wasn't here.
You know, it's kind of what you see is what you get in local government. That's one of the delights of it.
Well, you had a meeting last night.
Yes, we did.
And what stood out for you at the meeting? There's a few things I want to talk about. And near and dear to my heart is the district over by McGilchrist and some action having to do there.
Well, I thought probably the thing that stood out most to me was I had a proclamation declaring October Domestic Violence Month, and we had a whole batch of statistics that I thought were pretty jaw-dropping on the impact of domestic violence in this community, in this area. I had Paige Clark, the district attorney from Marion County, who's this has been an area of real activity for her, as well as the advocate for victims of domestic violence, and then Jane Downey from Center for Hope and Safety.
That is just something I just don't get. Domestic violence?
I don't get.
And we kind of all live in denial, I think a lot of us do, about how often it happens and how severe the case is. And learning about domestic violence is when I knew that I could never be a police officer.
The statistics, and people can look the proclamation up online, or you and I can look it up and read it, but I'll not do that to anybody this afternoon. It's just thousands and thousands of events coupled with really more individuals affected by it. I mean, how many people are affected by domestic, the impact on children, the kinds of things you really don't expect to really hear it described in such complete detail. It's a genuine problem, but it's a problem everywhere. It is one that you don't see. You hear very little about until there's something just very graphic that occurs that brings in the police. I just would suggest that folks take a minute, think about this issue, and recognize it's one that is really has an impact in our community.
Mayor, what can we do? What can we do if we live in a household that does not have domestic violence, but we want to be part of the solution? What can we do?
Well, there are various programs that go on. I would suggest contacting the district attorney, Paige Clarkson, and kind of go over with her what's available in terms of programs through her office. She has a batch of opportunities. There are court-appointed advocates for children that assist children that get caught up in this that need assistance or some sort of adult with them as they go through the process. Jane Downing out down at Center for Hope and Safety is probably the biggest center for dealing with domestic violence issues. They have call sort of emergency call numbers and situations where you can get some counseling and assistance through them. And I suspect that through Paige and Jane, you can really get plugged into a whole variety of opportunities to help folks in these situations.
And so, the other one, too, is see something, say something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing.
So it's timely that this gets brought up. And I think, in summary, what you're saying is look for opportunities to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Give, if you can, financially to institutions that provide shelter and escape and counseling, you know, for both the kids and abused spouses and so forth. So either you're volunteering your time, your treasures, right, or your skills in these efforts. And Dave, I think you said exactly right. Just in the last several days, actually, we've learned of a coworker of somebody we're related to. So got to keep it vague here. But, you know, it was saying that her husband does this. Her husband didn't die. You know, husband punishes her for not doing the chores in the right order.
Wow.
Right. And oddly enough, for two people who are very different, my wife and I have both had the exact same reaction. We said, does she need to come here?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. See something, say something, mm-hmm. you know, raise your hand. Does she need to come here? You go tell her that at any time she can come here. And it's so important.
Give him a safety place.
I'm a pretty calm person. I'm, you know, not a violent person, and I don't get, you know, yelling and screaming very much. But I know there's just some things that boil my blood. And anybody preying upon somebody weaker than they in this kind of abuse, I can't tell. That's why I'm like, I'm an officer of the law, and I come into a domestic abuse situation, and there's a battered woman, or worse, a battered child, right? And there's the person that's doing it, and I'm holding a handgun. Do I paint a picture?
Yes.
Yeah. This is why
you didn't go into policing, right?
This is why I cannot be a police officer, because I do not have that kind of mature self-restraint, apparently. Anyway, well, thank you, Mayor, for bringing that up and for the proclamation, and hopefully we can improve the situation in Marion County. There's a couple of things we would like to rid our society and our community of, and one is the need for domestic abuse victim advocacy, and of course the Liberty House. And we would love to see the Liberty House, which helps traumatized and abused children, go out of business.
We're just real fortunate to have the kind of leadership in these very, very difficult areas that we do have in the community. Folks that really know what they're doing, know how to organize all of our efforts, if you're interested, to really help in this way. I think we have some very talented people involved in this area that have changed people's lives, or at least help protect them from really pretty serious harm.
So if you're listening and you've been subject to abuse, you've witnessed abuse, or you're the abuser and you want to make it stop, there's help for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's seek it out. District Attorney's Office, just seek it out and get some help, right? All right, let's take a break right there, because that's a heavy topic. We're going to come back and talk about something more perfunctory, like streets, okay?
Okay.
All right, so McGillcrest, I know you don't understand why Brent's so obsessed with it, but I'll tell you right after the break. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and in the studios with us is Mayor Chuck. Mayor Chuck. City
not
of Salem.
Chuck, not Chucky, just no, Mayor Chuck.
Chuck. And caught my eye on your agenda for last night, because the city is making some steps towards acquiring some rights of way, which means, you know, the borders around the streets, folks, and in anticipation of improving the McGillicuddy District. I was on city council when we created an urban renewal area that encompasses just this very stretch. And if you're not familiar with that area of town, it's industrial. And it kind of spans 12th Street, when major north-south arterial, and 25th Street, which, of course, goes along the west side of the airport. There's a lot of industrial land in there. And there's some underutilized properties. There's properties that can't be developed because the road infrastructure isn't there. And frankly, when we look at Mill Creek Station out on Kubler / Corden Road, a lot of those uses are being taken, which is great news for our economy and our employment base. But it also creates a situation where we don't have a lot of places for new industrial uses to go. So finally, now it's 10, 11 years later, and we're looking at doing some improvements along McGillcrest. The whole road, Mayor, the whole road, and I know you don't believe me, but I actually used to bike this when I kept an office at the airport.
Really?
And I just thought, one, this is really, really hazardous. Not only is there no sidewalk, no curb, no gutter, no bike lane, but it's crumbling at the seams. I mean, just it's a civic embarrassment how bad a condition this road is in. It's just, and that's how I felt at the time, and I was really passionate about it. We need an urban renewal area, and we need to make sure that this little thoroughfare, which is access to a lot of industrial lands, gets taken care of. So
yeah, it's and last night was an opportunity to use federal funds that have been applied for generally through various type of grant programs, as I recall how that worked, to make these purchases. And there was some discussion about adding a bike lane for guys like you that like to bicycle everywhere and sidewalks and stuff like that. It's going to be really quite nice. It's going to take a number of years. This has been a very slow process because there hasn't been a lot of development out there, which is the way urban renewal is funded, is the increased property tax value. But there also is a brewery district out there. I'm retired, so I know Social Security is out there. Veterans Affairs is out there. There's a number of offices. There is some commercial activity, particularly closer to the airport. The lighting company. Gallery. Yeah, thank you. There have been a couple of coffee houses, a couple of taverns out there. But it really has been in need, like you say, for probably 20 years to be improved.
And what it does, folks, is because the road does not up to a certain standard. If Dave Board came in and bought a piece of property in the middle of McGillcrest stretch there and wanted to build something, they would have put such transportation requirements upon you and infrastructure that it becomes economically infeasible.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a situation where the government's going to have to come in and put some of this infrastructure in, be it flood control, which is an issue out there, right? Flood control and drainage and the sidewalks and gutters and all these things so that it's economically feasible for someone to build.
Yeah.
Because we have had developers out there who said, I want to do this. And basically they were told, well, you're going to have to bring the standard of the street up to where it needs to be from all the way from 25th to 12th Street. And there's not
that's the city's requirements.
Yeah. So because
and
you can't have
but it
this.
It is the way it happens, though, is the way Brent described it.
Yeah,
is if you want to build a building,
right,
you have to make the improvements because nobody else needs them desperately, but you do. And that's kind of the way that has worked over the years. And it's the way you get this sort of development pays for itself concept. But this one, it really became a chicken or egg. You weren't going to get the development unless you got the improvements. And there were two ways to do it. One was through a bond measure citywide, but this is such an expensive piece of road. It was going to take up a great deal of any kind of bond measure. So really been working on federal grants, and then we'll use it as development occurs out there. We'll use that increased valuation. It's actually a very good system for doing this. It's just a much slower than kind of the straightforward bond measure type.
Really, federal grant process is slow, huh?
Yeah,
very slow.
Imagine that.
Very slow. Hey, one other. You mentioned something, and I'm just going to, because I know the producer isn't in the room right now, I'm going to share with you this story idea.
Oh, boy.
I think I would get somebody from the city on to talk about the flood overlay zone and flood insurance and what's going on in that general area. We had a public hearing on that last night. There is a lot of confusion, I think, about what's going on with 500-year flood zones, building in flood zones, what kind of improvements can you have without having to meet certain standards, and particularly the cost of flood insurance and how that's affected by all of this. And I'll tell you, it's so complicated. I could give you the short Chuck Bennett version, which would be short and confusing and probably wrong. Mm-hmm. It was so complicated, but I think there are a couple of folks over at City Hall that know this, and there is, I think, substantial interest in this problem out there.
Yeah, and you know those maps do change.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, right.
What's included in the maps and who has to have flood insurance and this and that.
And the feds have pulled out on subsidizing flood insurance. So a lot of flood insurance is now coming right to the mortgage holder. That's where you tend to have flood insurance. I mean, you're the insurance guy. You know this better than probably any of us do. But that it's something I really think you'd find folks would be really appreciate the opportunity to hear more about what's going on with this issue.
Absolutely.
That's a good tip, Mayor.
And that's what I'm here for.
We'll work on it.
And it does intersect with McGillcrest.
It does. Right? It really does.
We're going to be looking to that area for continuing. You know, people need warehouse space. People need light manufacturing space and things like that. Yeah. And that's where it's going to have to go, folks, when Mill Creek is completely full.
Which is getting there.
Not that far away. So the flood, and that there are areas there just east of the railroad. So these are the things that make it complicated and expensive. You can't just like, hey, we're going to do an overlay and we're going to add a curb, because the city did use some urban renewal area funds a couple of years back to pay for the pre-engineering so that they could get these grants. So they need to engineer how to handle the floodwaters, how to handle the drainage, how to handle all of these things, right? The sewage and da-da-da. So do all the civil engineering work along the stretch. So it's, in effect, it's that's paid for. And so it's shovel ready, but it's also grant ready.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And it points again to how I think people think there's something fairly simple about how local government is financed and gets its work done and it all comes out of the same pot. And this is one of those examples where there must be four or five different pots. And I think it's a function of management to apply those in a timely, appropriate fashion that allows you to leverage the money along the way and accomplish the most goals. It's a really good study in how to accomplish a very difficult government improvement. And they are hard to do.
And the other thought is the street should never have gotten that far into the
This is true.
Into the state
of disrepair.
The state of disrepair in this street.
Oh,
they
got
never
streets are in this. It's happening all over town. That's why
I
we'll go
that,
back
but...
out for a bond measure.
Yeah.
But this one also is at the edge of town. Remember where you are out there? You're way out in the middle of nowhere with nothing going on.
Yeah, I've
at
been
the
there.
Time that it began to deteriorate. I'm not sure that wasn't even picked up from the county in an annexation. I'm not sure when that came in. A lot of streets like that, particularly those sort of little further from downtown that don't have sidewalks, were annexed from the county before the county had any kind of standard on what size roads, because these were country roads and certainly didn't worry too much about sidewalks.
So right.
We still have a lot of that. Lansing Park, they still have difficulties at Park.
And it's circulation as well. Through the last bond measure for transportation, they did punch 22nd Street into Madrona. And then in these improvements, they want to acquire the land so they can realign 22nd Street.
Right.
So it's a straight stretch from Mission Street through McGillcrest to Madrona. And that kind of circulation will be really critical. And improvements on 25th Street for a wider lane. I mean, in some of this, if you've ever done this during rush hour and get off work.
Oh, it's something else.
Down at 12th, between 12th and Pringle and McGillcrest, getting really backed up, especially with the new developments there and a new light there. But
really the alternative. I mean, if you're just using the Commercial Liberty Corridor to get back and forth, this is where it's going to also be. I mean, you see it on and have for years on Battle Creek and Pringle, 25th. I mean, we're starting to have to use all of these available north-south streets to move people around, and it's... As the South End has built out, kind of from east to west, the need for these streets to catch up is really important.
All right, so this is good. McGillcrest improvements. I'm happy to see it finally happening. It takes a long time, but I'm happy to see it finally happening.
And you said it would be years, right?
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
tomorrow?
No, we're not done.
Not happening tomorrow? Tomorrow.
No, you should be done tomorrow. Right away.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Mayor, let's change the subject entirely. Let's talk about an empty seat in Ward 7, and the council subcommittee has determined to interview three people, right?
Right. The boards and commissions committee of the council, it's four council members, took a look at all the applications. There were about 11 ultimately. We had one person withdraw sort of voluntarily. And so went through it, took a look at them, and really got to went through a discussion of both experience, knowledge of the cities, could really hit the ground running. They're in for only 1 year until they would be replaced or replace themselves if they decide to run for election. Three candidates really rose in that discussion because of it. A lot of it was experience. And
you're on the subcommittee, right?
Yeah.
Along with three other counselors?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that really rose to that. And there was there were those three with the level of experience and expertise they brought to the table. Just it was very clear that it would be one of them kind of no matter what. The council only has so much time to do these interviews. And I think the feeling was we don't want to do like a question and a 1 minute answer on everything in order to get everybody through. So it was how do we have the most in-depth with the most likely people to be appointed by the city council.
Okay, wait, Mayor, was there, so there's nine of you, eight councilors and yourself, four of you on the subcommittee, in effect, filtering out eight people. Was there any situation where a councilor was saying, well, I have my favorite and I think this person should be on the top of the list and telling the subcommittee, you know?
None.
Very interesting. Yeah. They didn't like tell, hey, we really need this person to be one of the three, or
nope.
Just left it up to the subcommittee.
Not that I experienced, no. No.
Okay. So it came down to three, did not include, this is the biggest surprise for me, it did not include Warren Benares.
Yeah.
And we were talked about Warren and supported him on the show, of course.
Absolutely.
Because he could just sit down and be effective right away and knowledgeable.
Yeah, that was not the decision of this. That was not where this subcommittee went.
Huh.
The silence is deafening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right, tell us about
it. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a lot of dynamics on the city council, and this is one of those dynamic situations. But I think Warren had indicated, Benards in his particular case, had indicated that he was not interested in running for the office in the future. And he certainly represented, without a doubt, the single most experienced person in representing Ward 7. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, let's not use that. Let's make sure we don't put that in there.
And then there was also the factor of he was unsuccessful in his election with Sally Cook, who was the counselor who resigned. And there was a strong feeling that the by members of the committee that the Ward had spoken on that. So it's interesting. I mean, those are just some of the issues that came up.
So Reed's son is already a candidate to run for the board, and he's right. One of the three.
Yes.
Are the other two candidates plan on running? Or would they
don't know. I don't know personally. Only reason I know Reed's running is because Reed took out papers to run. Bonnie Heitsch, my understanding is she plans on running, and the same with Vanessa Nordyke, that she also plans on running.
Hmm.
So what we have are folks who are actually running for the job.
All right. So whether or not they were going to serve in the future and run, really it became a non-issue since all of them likely are to anyway.
Probably the only one who said, I'm not going to run was Warren, you know, it was just interesting. I mean, you know, I have worked with Warren for many years, about 9 years on the city council, or not quite, I guess it'd be 4 years on the city council with Warren. Just a genuinely good good and effective.
If you're involved in doing good work in Salem for any period of time, you intersect with Warren Benares at some point.
That's absolutely correct.
All right. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem, and you're listening to Newsmakers. We're going to have to take a break, but stick it with us. There's more to come with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to Newsmakers and KYKN for local talk. We have impressed upon the mayor to stick with us a little bit longer because we wanted to get an update.
Chained him to the chair.
And by impressed, I mean duct tape. And I drove by this today, and I was looking at the progress at our police facility. I want to say public safety building, really, because it's going to encompass so many more roles. But our police facility, the wall panels are going up, and the mayor was just inside there. So tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I did. Actually, I did two tours last week with a couple of different groups of folks that have been involved in this process. And what you've got is the building has really taken shape. You can now get a fairly good look at what the building will look like. Still missing is a huge community room that'll be on the front end of it, which is the south end. And the parking deck and some of those other, there's more to come, I guess, on the outside. But you really get a sense now what the building's going to look like in terms of its basic scope. And when you go inside on a tour with one of the folks who knows the building, and I go with Chief Moore or Deputy Chief Belshaw, and they've been intimately involved and can kind of bring it to life. And what you're discovering is a real live police station instead of kind of a basement storeroom substituting as a police station, which is essentially what they've dealt with for years now. And we've had the same location for over 40 years in Salem for our police, which is down on the ground floor of City Hall. And this is this takes the various things the city has scattered all over town, like evidence, all of their vehicles, the crime lab, I mean, the whole list of things, and brings them into the same building.
Yeah.
It's quite remarkable. And it also essentially demonstrates how to create a building that is both good for the public, good for the victim, good for the police, and allows them to manage people who have gotten into a situation with the police. So it really is very good. It has all the facilities that they need. It's got this public community room is really a beautiful facility as envisioned. It's going to be a major public meeting room for about 100 to 150 people. It'll also be our emergency center. If an emergency occurs, the whole thing is built to a 9.0 earthquake standard, which is the big one. This will be the building that we'll all be looking at.
You're running operations out of.
It'll be the one place still standing. But it's more than just standing. It'll be operational. That was the main thing. It's gotten an operational within, I think, 24 hours operational standard.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up about the meeting room and the operations, because I'm probably one of those naysayers that do we really need another space for community meetings? We have them, you know, north of there. We have them south of there. Is that really a place that we need that space to dedicate to community meetings in a public safety building? But if it's the command center, then it gives another use.
Yeah, the command center, it's right next to the training room, so it gives them larger training space. I mean, the thing you begin to figure out is they had planned this. There are multiple functions. The functions that overlap appropriately. Probably the thing that is most striking, this may sound odd, was the evidence area and the very sophisticated way. For everyone who watches, you know, crime police TV, you know, chain of of
change of custody.
Yeah, all of those things become very important. That has all been dealt with in a very secure and large enough area. We will no longer be renting space, I think, in Kaiser for part of our custodial. And there's evidence that has to be held for 100 years.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
You've got armaments that have to be, you know, guns and stuff like that that have to be held a certain way. You've got right now, just as an example, one room will have a large walk-in refrigerator and freezer, big pieces, because right now they have to freeze a certain amount of evidence. As soon as a freezer gets full, they just go out and buy another freezer to put it in. So they've got multiple freezers. I mean, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of the guy's name it was somebody's closet. It was a famous radio show in our parents' age. But they had all kinds of stuff. They'd open this closet and you hear it all kind of come falling out. When you talk with the chief and the deputy chief about the current situation, that's kind of how the current situation feels, where two or three guys share a desk, where multiple people are crammed into a locker, if they have a locker, where they don't have place at the kind mm-hmm. of appropriate mm-hmm. places for all kinds of storage. Take a walk with them. It's great.
Go get a tour. So you were saying, I like how the mayor uses the euphemism. It's like people have gotten into a situation with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Dave and I probably would refer to those as perps, right? So
bad guys.
Is there an entrance? Because I know this is a big issue for this facility and problem for our current situation is sometimes people who are the alleged perps are in too close a proximity to the people who are the complainants or the victims.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and that's all dealt with. They're in separate places. The mm-hmm. other thing that's kind of exciting for those of you who visit City Hall very often, you will no longer have to ride up in the elevator with a perp, which is the current situation. There actually are sally ports for bringing people in. There is an elevator dedicated to folks who have committed a crime or been accused of committing a crime where they can be taken to parts of the building where it's both secure as well as separated. There's a couple of sections devoted to victims and perpetrators of domestic violence mm. and to children who are caught up in that and have to go to the police station too with a small child care room and it really has thought of all the kinds of things they've seen here in Salem that have not been dealt with for over 40 years.
Wow. That'd be great to see this come to fruition. And you were saying during the break that this is about a year out, September next year.
Almost exactly a year out. Toward next summer, I think the building will be done. And I think in September, they'll be moving in. And it's going to be pretty interesting because there's going to be a lot of empty space around town where they've got stuff mm-hmm. kind of stashed away all over town, particularly cars and vehicles. Our crime lab will no longer be out here in Kaiser at Willow Lake. It will be there with adequate facilities. Our whole SWAT team, all of it will be in one place with its vehicles all in one place instead of scattered all over town.
Like the show SWAT?
Much more like the show SWAT than,
nice. Okay.
than like Car 54, Where Are You? You know.
So the building is going up, and it's on the Division Street side of the entire property, and there's a lot of real estate to the north of it. Is that going to have covered parking? I know obviously we have a lot of police officers going to be and cars will be there. Probably the command vehicle that was purchased and the SWAT vehicles,
all
the special
all
things.
Vehicles, all. Wow. Vehicles will be in a secure location. It will have two levels of parking, ground, and I believe a second large parking, raised parking area.
Deck.
Yeah, deck-like thing. And
expandable, I'm sure.
I assume so. Well,
I would hope so.
But to a certain extent, I mean, there is a limitation on the size of that piece of property. Remember, it goes just to the creek, and that's the end of it. So
you can build up.
Could. Let me just just for a minute, I'll give you the history of Salem. They have been in the basement of City Hall for over 40 years without one extra inch being added to that space for them. So what they've had to do is adapt. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we'll see here.
Yeah.
There are spaces that you're kind of looking, well, this is sure nice and spacious, or this use. Well, what they're thinking of is, well, this there's several conference rooms they talk about. What they are future offices. I mean, we're going to add 60,000 people over the next 20 to 30 years in Salem. That's the anticipated growth of the city. We're not adding them, but it's going to grow that way. We are going to need a larger police department. I mean, we are already one of the lowest sort of cops per thousand cities in the country. We're not doing well in that area. And clearly, as our demographics change and the needs arise and the expectations of the department change as well, we'll be adding officers. And this will have the space for them.
All right, we're going to take one last break, and we're going to let Mayor Chuck Bennett get off to keep running the city. And we want to thank you for being in here with us and for our update. And we've got a couple of...
I got to just fix it real quick. I don't run the city, honestly. It's not, I'm mayor.
A couple of other local items coming up, so stick with us. There's more to come on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Thanks for joining us during your noon hour here for some local talk. And we've enjoyed talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett here this hour and some of the updates, including the police facility.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny how he says he doesn't run the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't. No, that's what we've
He's
got
like
a city
the face of the
for.
City. Face
yes,
of the city.
Yes, very
okay.
much. Yeah.
All right.
And
so it's all a facade?
You know, the city council, a lot of people don't realize that. They have the authority, the power, to hire and fire exactly one person.
The city manager.
The city manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the city manager is the CEO of the city, and he runs the city. And the mayor and the council, they're the ones that direct what the where the resources go, how they get budgeted, mm-hmm. and what the priorities are. And the city manager executes it. It's a pretty big corporation. You don't want to leave in the hands of, you know, lobbyists and things like that.
True. We should have the city manager back on.
We should have the city manager on. So the thing about the police facility, folks, that I like, even though it's a big ticket, and we've complained about how much the cost overruns are and what a huge percentage it was of the total project. And, you know, it's not only like 18% cost overruns, but also we're cutting down the scope of the project. So we're getting less for more, mm-hmm. which is not really the way you want to go. However, what's very exciting about it is, as the mayor was talking, we're going to get more efficient.
Yeah.
Right? Especially since we have a shortage of police officers per 1,000 residents. Now they don't have to drive to Kaiser during part of their shift to drop off evidence, pick up evidence, right? Mm-hmm. The crime lab, things like that. Things will be right there. They're not driving all over town.
And all the vehicles will be parked right there.
And the vehicles and everything.
That's going to be important.
So much more efficiency and hopefully, you know, intercommunications. Rather than having everything spread out where you're not bumping into the person who is storing your evidence or evaluating your evidence in the crime lab and all these things. So, yeah, that part is critical for me as a self-avowed fiscal conservative. That's really important. And it's one of the reasons why, despite some people didn't like the location, a location near the center of town that is in – you know, pretty close proximity to City Hall was really needed to be found. And this is going to serve well.
Easy access to the bridges so they can get over the bridge.
Yeah, the bridge.
Yep. If they build another bridge, then they would have access to get to the West Salem side.
They'll just wait in line at the ferry.
Like the rest of us.
They'll be up trying to get a ride on the ferry, assuming that there's any power.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Or if there's a bridge to be had. when I think of the new police facility, I think of the one that they had on CSI Miami.
I'm not familiar.
It was a really nice police building. Really nice. And yeah. I that's what I envisioned with this one to be looking like. Well, futuristic and leading the charge.
It is, I don't know, I watch my share of TV, but I will tell you, I couldn't tell you who's in CSI. It seems like there's always an episode on one channel or other. It's like 24/7.
Look
always,
for the old ones.
Isn't there like
CSI Miami? They stopped making that one a long time ago, but it's always been good.
CSI and NCIS and
NCIS is on, SWAT is a good one too.
All right, so Dave Bourne, you must have read about it in the news, but the effort to recall the governor has fallen short of their signatures. Is that a done deal?
It's unbelievable.
Had they turned them in, or they just said they didn't even bother turning them in because they don't have enough?
They turned them in, verified all the signatures, and they came up about 10% short, even though they gathered a huge amount.
Yeah, we don't have this in the public eye very often anymore. Yeah. And a couple of Secretary of States ago, it was very, very controversial because the Secretary of State, and this has happened more recently in some rulemaking, but how many can they throw out based on supposed fraud or not even fraud, but errors in the collection process?
Well, they take only a few from each page, so to speak.
Their page is either approved or it's not approved. And for X number of ones, they're like, oh, that signature is not valid or that address is not, they'll throw out a
the whole page.
Percentage of it.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, and they've made it harder and harder. And I get it. I get it with the initiative process. It's done by activists with an agenda, right? And sometimes there's somebody I agree with and sometimes not, but they're activists with an agenda. Mm-hmm. They're not lawmakers. They're not getting the treatment that a lawmaker does at the Capitol, where you have people writing a law that understand how to. Right, so sometimes they're poorly written. I think we saw that with Measure 37 a while back. Oftentimes, they're actually poorly written, and they drive people crazy.
Yeah,
because they're taking the control over from the senators and House. I actually find that somewhat bemusing.
Well, how many signatures are on each page? 10, 20?
Depends on the petition, but
right. But why would they throw out a whole page because one's bad?
Oh, it's worse than that.
They should take just a black marker through that one and say that's bad and accept the other ones good.
I agree with you, but they don't look at every page. So they're statistically disavowing X number. So if
that's wrong.
Here's a mistake and we looked at this many and we found this mistake, so we're going to throw out perfectly valid signatures. It is wrong.
My signature is valid. It should count no matter what.
People in state government that don't like their power being taken over by the initiative process try to make it harder and harder for we citizens to make our own laws. I don't like that.
No, I don't
either. I get that there's problems.
Yeah.
I get that there's some upheaval. It just, I'm in favor of it. That's the problem. I'm in favor of it.
Our government was based on that.
And what drives Oregonians crazy is when we pass something and then 2 years later the legislature overrules us. And that has happened recently.
And we start going, what's the point, right?
Yeah. That's to their own political peril. When they say, hey, the people spoke. Yeah, but you don't know what you're doing. And we saw a lot of that through the party that was in power this last session, right?
Yes, we did.
All right, we got to go. This is the end of our Tuesday show, but stick with us tomorrow for Wednesdays with Denise, and I'll be talking to you on Thursday.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.